23 meeting of the Law Enforcement and Public Safety Committee to order. Can we get a roll call, please?
Chair Gina Hanset.
Present.
Deputy Chair Christopher Hewitt. Legislator A. Buchetel.
Present.
Legislator Dean Fabiano.
Present.
There are three committee members present.
So we have a quorum. Can we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. First thing is approval of the April 6, 2023 meeting minutes. May I have a motion to approve the minutes of the April 6th meeting?
I'll move it.
Legislator Fabiano, in a second. Legislator Buchetel. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
And the minutes are approved. We're going to get right into our resolutions. For the May 16th, 2023 session. The first one is resolution number 133, supporting New York State Senate Bill S-182 and Assembly Bill A-710 to end qualified immunity for certain defendants. Motion to discuss.
I'll move it. Second.
And discussion? Anybody want to speak on this? Legislator Erner?
Thank you, Chair. So, as the one who brought this forth, this is based off of a resolution unanimously passed by the Village Board of New Paltz a couple of months ago. And while it does speak to police specifically in the resolution, it also is about public officers generally. I see we have some new information that we've just been given as we arrived about it, so I haven't had a chance to really digest that so far. I'm not sure if the committee has, but I'd love to hear what others are thinking at this point.
Yeah, I support this. I think qualified immunity is a problem. I think I've not digested the material that was shared with us yet. I think it's, my first reaction to this is if qualified immunity was as insignificant as this material makes it out to be, then probably they wouldn't be fighting so hard to maintain it. I also think this material is kind of disrespectful to the judicial system by saying that the only people that would benefit from ending qualified immunity is trial attorneys. I think the Bar Association would probably have something to say about that. I realize that this comes from a national organization, not anyone in this room, but I would like time to be able to digest this and kind of suss this out a little bit further. So I don't know if the sponsor is, eager to have us vote on this tonight. Personally, I would be happy to learn more about this. I don't mean to imply that I already know everything I need to know about this. It's something I could still learn more about.
Sheriff?
I'd like to discuss some of the issues. As we all know, this is a hot topic that's been going on for quite some time. I became a state trooper when I was 22 years old. I got to wear a uniform, and before that I put the uniform of a Marine at the age of 18. There are certain responsibilities that comes with that uniform. The government tells me to do something and I'm required to do it. Qualified immunity is not what people think it is. If you break the law as a member of law enforcement, and as a criminal act, you're going to be held accountable. I think you need to think about the split-second decision that someone at the age of 21 or older, my age, has to do when we get called out to a certain call that most people on this table don't have to respond to. I would like to ask if you yourselves know what type of immunity you have. Do you know what type of immunity you have, legislator?
Presumably the same that this whole...
You have full immunity. We have qualified immunity, which means every law that you put out, every law, and it has any effects and causes the death of someone, no one can sue you. No one. I am not opposed to looking at qualified immunity and amending it, but doing away with it totally, the people who are going to suffer are the taxpayer themselves. Because law enforcement, we all have to indemnify the people that work for us. And it says right in that law that the government will be required to indemnify their employees, meaning that individuals would not have to personally pay. This legislation does not hold public officers to account. It only punishes the taxpayer. Just because it sounds good doesn't mean it's good. I asked the members of this committee to do the research and the homework. I don't know of anybody really that has gotten off on qualified immunity in my 35-year career if they committed a crime. They get held accountable, they get arrested. So if you expect someone that wears a uniform to make that split-second decision that you're not able to make, because I'm wearing this uniform because the government is telling me I'm responsible, I'm trained, and I'm the one that's qualified and trained to go out and do something in response to a crime that's being committed. That's what I'm supposed to do. And if I do it wrong, I'm going to be held accountable. So I ask that you do the research. And I'm not saying it doesn't need amending. Let's amend it if that's what you want to do. Fine. But simply doing away with it puts the burden on the taxpayer. Simple as that. I'm not going to have, and nor would anyone in their right mind that works in government, if I do something while I'm uniform, I should be available, you know, take me and hold me accountable for it. But if I'm off duty and do something wrong, I'm going to be held accountable. And that's the difference. And you need to really look at what qualified immunity really is and what it's for. And those that are in elective office have full immunity, judges, legislators. So if you want to do away with qualified immunity, I say do away with all immunity. Why do you have to have full immunity? You don't have to make the split second decision to decide if somebody's life has to go or not when you go into a robbery or a homicide sin. Yeah, right. Yet that's what you're expecting a 21-year-old to do, or a 22-year-old to do.
Excuse me.
Sorry.
Someone's speaking.
That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. District Attorney Cleek.
You know, I've been on both sides of these issues. I brought civil rights actions against law enforcement officials that crossed the line. Qualified immunity only addresses civil responsibility. My concern was, when I looked at this resolution, it talked about all the deaths that had occurred. There is nothing, as in nothing, about qualified immunity that prevents anyone from holding them accountable for criminal acts. That's not the issue here. It's civil acts, and it's civil rights acts. And what it protects them for, in the normal world, if you run into the back of somebody when you're driving a car and you weren't paying attention, you can be held responsible for negligence. Qualified immunity means you have to show that the police officer acted with bad faith, knowing that something was wrong, knowing the policies and procedures that he should have followed or she should have followed, and they didn't do it. It's an extra level of proof. I just want to make it clear that that's what this is about. It's about civil liability, and the sheriff is absolutely right. Every governmental authority already protects every officer. If I sue, you know, as an attorney, the sheriff or anybody in the police department in any jurisdiction, it's the governmental source that's responsible for that, and they have insurance for that. So that's what this is about. I understand where the concept came from. I understand the concerns. I think it's overblown. I honestly do. Bad faith is something that can be proved when somebody goes outside of the law that they know should be enforced. Anyway, I don't want to take a strong stand. I just want to let you know that it's not about criminal liability at all. And, you know, the concern about people who have died as a result of police action, this does not address that. So what your decision should be about is civil liability that our governments, every governmental entity in this county already takes care of. And it is. It's a civil liability. No police officer is held personally responsible. if they act inappropriately. The government pays for that. So that's what I wanted to make clear.
Okay. Yes.
Chair, I may?
Yes.
Just because you mentioned that the Village of New Paltz passed this resolution. And I've had conversations with people at Mark Police Commission meetings, our conversations with the police. There's a group that has advocated for supporting this.
Can you just introduce yourself?
I apologize. My name is Bobby Casey. I'm with the New Paltz Police Department. So, the chief there, we've had people that have advocated for this. One of the questions I've asked them is, how is this going to hold law enforcement accountable? This law clearly states that a municipality must indemnify an individual unless they are convicted of a criminal offense. So you could have an officer, a deputy, who commits an egregious use of force that violates policy, but is not convicted of a criminal offense, and it becomes the municipality's responsibility to indemnify that individual. You ask us as law enforcement executives to hold our people accountable, to take action. This law prevents that from happening, and I still have not had anybody explain to me how this holds us accountable. I've gone to the NQI website, and it talks about citing all of the criminal, deaths and criminal violations. This doesn't do anything for that. I also want to echo what the sheriff said. How we police is important, but how government uses the police is just as important. I was upset when the Village of New Paltz decided to support a resolution, considering the fact that 2.5 years ago, the Village of New Paltz contemplated enacting a mandatory mask zone in the village that would put my officers in the untenable position of having to arrest somebody for not wearing a mask, creating a potential use of force situation. If somebody says, no, I'm not wearing that mask. So that's on us. So I would just ask, as you look at this law, how does it hold officers accountable, not just us, but all municipal officers accountable, but also how you're going to prevent this from stopping us being able to, hold people accountable, but also how you're doing your job as well. I do think this is a very bad law, and I certainly will say that qualified immunity is an issue. I have no problem saying that. I've said it publicly at our meetings. I think there needs to be changes, but I don't support this in any way, shape, or form. And I was disappointed that our village government decided to take that vote.
Thank you. Discussion, yes?
So I appreciate the acknowledgement that qualified immunity is an issue. Perhaps the path forward is best to amend it or to make changes to it. But I would like to learn more about this. I think these are a valid discussion. So I would make a motion. I am making a motion to postpone 1 month so that we can learn more about this.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor?
We should have discussion on the postponement.
Okay. Thank you. Discussion on the postponement. Everybody's okay with that? Okay. All those in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
I'm opposed.
Okay. The motion's carried 3-1. Resolution number 290, confirming the appointment of Valerie Naccarato as Director of Probation. A motion to discuss. Moved by Legislator Uchitel. Second.
Second.
By Legislator Hewitt. Discussion? Yes.
I'll just say in my interactions, I have found Valerie to be a great asset, and I'm excited to see you move into this role.
Thank you. Should we vote first or have her talk about herself first?
Talk first.
Okay. Yes, welcome. And can you just give us, I know that you've been here many years and we all know you, but if you'd like to say a couple words, we'd love to hear you.
Sure. You told me 34 years ago I'd be sitting here with this, I would have said you were crazy, but here I am. We never know how things are going to come out in life, but I'm honored to be able to follow in the footsteps of my predecessors and hopefully continue to do the good work that we've done as a department. Look forward to it.
Thank you. Anybody else? Is there a motion to adopt the resolution?
I'll move it to adopt it.
Charles.
Legislator.
Well, we have a motion to discuss that's on the table currently. Mm-hmm. So then we should call the question on that.
Okay. On the resolution. Just help me out.
Mm-hmm. Call the question on what?
Well, we have a motion to discuss. So the resolution is on the table right now. So we need to vote on the resolution. And that's what you can just say, call the question and record our votes.
So can I call the question?
That's what she was doing.
So then I do, is there a motion?
We don't need another motion.
No, okay.
Yeah.
So the question is?
All those in favor?
All those in favor.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Okay, welcome and
thank you.
Thank you.
Lots of luck to you.
Thank you.
And I appreciate everybody's patience because this is my first meeting, so. Resolution number 291, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a contract with the New York State Division of Criminal Services, Department of Probation. Motion to discuss?
Move it.
Legislator Ushetel. Second?
Second.
Legislator Hewitt. Discussion? Director Nakarada, would you like to speak on this?
Sure. This is the annual raise the age resolution. It's always a year behind, so we're actually looking to accept money last year.
Okay. Any questions or discussion? All right. Motion to adopt the resolution. That's what they have here. Is it incorrect?
If that's what they put there, but you can't have a motion and then a competing motion before that's voted.
So what should it be?
I think if we motion for it to be for discussion, mm-hmm. then we discuss and then you call the question
on
that.
Okay, right.
And then that resolves all of it. But you can't, until you've called the question on something that has an active motion in a second.
Correct.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. So I'm going to call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Resolution passes 4-0. Resolution 292, amending the 2023 county budget to create a full-time mental health specialist, social worker, a full-time paralegal, and establish a full-time family court bureau chief with a salary increase, this public defender's office. Motion to discuss?
Make the motion.
Second it.
Let's do it, and you should tell. Discussion. Public Defender Corrado, would you like to speak on this?
Sure. These are just the positions that were created with the grant money that was approved last month with that grant, but this resolution was improperly drafted last time. So all the money will be reimbursed from a New York State grant, and this is to improve parental representation in Article 10, that is neglect and abuse matters in the family court.
Okay. Any discussion? Call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Okay. The resolution passed 4-0. Thank you. Resolution 293, amending the 2023-2028 capital improvement project, establishing the capital project number 670, Ulster County Sheriff's Office Bearcat G3, amending the 2023 capital budget fund budget, Ulster County Sheriff. Motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
Legislator Fabiano, second.
Second.
Legislator Ushetel, discussion? And
so good afternoon again, everybody. We actually talked extensively about this last year, and that's why we made the budget. This is a piece of equipment that in today's world is needed. We presently have an MRAP, which is a military vehicle. The upkeep of this vehicle is extremely expensive, and we really do need a civilian vehicle that will last 30 years here in this county. It's about equipping our folks to do the job that's needed in today's dangerous world that we're living in. Just last weekend, With the gun buyback at 15 assault style weapons off the streets. $66,000 were given out to folks. Over 235 weapons were turned in. That was just last weekend, and those are people that are volunteering to bring things in. As we sit here now, there was something that occurred here in the county that you'll all hear about either later on tonight and tomorrow, that this vehicle probably would have been used in. I did bring a couple of folks here to talk of the history as to why we got it to begin with. This vehicle has been used 60 times deployed since 2016. And I'm gonna first turn it over to Chief Lucchese so he can explain what happened in 2015 and the importance of this vehicle and this equipment. Chief.
In 2015, we had an individual who was shooting at officers, not with an assault rifle, just a hunting rifle. And he had officers pinned down. This occurred on 32 South in the town of New Paltz. We had to wait over 3 hours to get an armored vehicle in order to evacuate officers and civilians. The discussions about getting an armored vehicle armored rescue vehicle, whatever you want to call it, started immediately following that. And it showed the importance of having that piece of equipment. We had officers informed away for an extended period of time because we had no means to adequately evacuate that. I look at a piece of equipment like this as invaluable because, it allows us to do our jobs, but it provides us with valuable cover that can help us make better decisions, as a situation unfolds. In that moment, I was there that day. I was there when we were getting shot at. I was there when one of our officers was pinned down behind a vehicle. I was there when it took over 3 hours to get the state police's Bearcat up operational and evacuating people in our community to safety. I would implore you to pass this resolution and allow the sheriff's office and the emergency response team to have, to get this vehicle. It is necessary. We're asked to place ourselves in harm's way, and what we always say to our governing body is, we hope that you'll equip us and train us so that we can do the job adequately. And I think this is a very important piece of equipment.
Thank you, Chief. I also brought the emergency response team commander here today, and that's Lieutenant Joe Sudo. He's going to talk briefly about the piece of equipment that we're talking about here today.
Good evening, Chair, and good evening, everyone. Thank you for having me and to kind of support what the sheriff and the chief have spoken about is I commend the emergency response team, and we ask the men and women that are on that team to go in situations that are inherently dangerous, if not more dangerous, for regular patrol units or detective units to handle. As a commander, it's tough to make those decisions knowing that the calls that we're responding to in the past, out of those 60 calls that the sheriff had spoken about, over 75% of them involve firearms. In the past 4 years that I've commanded the team, consecutively for the last 4 years, we've had the calls that involve firearms. The firearms had already been discharged during the incident, which means someone was shooting. Luckily, we haven't had lost a deputy or a police officer in the line of duty, but we all see the news, we see what's happening. There's literature out there where these rescue vehicles are being used to extract officers, to extract civilians. But going back on the MRAP, is the MRAP wasn't designed for law enforcement. It was designed for the military. My background prior to coming into law enforcement, I served in the Marine Corps. I served in the Middle East in the Marine Corps infantry. I've used armored vehicles, and I can tell you the MRAP does come with some capabilities that are not functional for police work as far as weight, size, dimension. There's restrictions on bridges, overpasses, low-hanging wires that don't make it really necessarily suitable. The reason why we're using it is because my men and women need to know that they have the confidence of protection when I ask them to go into harm's way to resolve a critical incident. This tool, it's a de-escalation tool. It has such a psychological impact when we pull up to a scene and they see an armored vehicle there. It's a communication platform. it helps us effectively communicate and get closer with suspects and individuals, and gives us time to help talk them down. We can go into costs and financials. Roughly, since we've had the MRAP, so we acquired the MRAP after the incident the chief spoke about, the whole process through the 1033 program, it took us a little over a year. So in December 2016, we acquired it. Since then, we've invested approximately $100,000 that the county will not see a return on its investment, because when we return that vehicle someday, all the equipment, everything we did, it goes back to the military as is. So it's a poor return on investment to maintain the MRAP. More importantly is, with us ending the wars in the Middle East, the military is no longer making that MRAP in production. So eventually, armored vehicles and the parts and components to maintain those vehicles, the price is going to go up because they're no longer in production. So thank you all for your time, for hearing us out and considering this.
Just one last note to remind everyone, we're just an hour, the southernmost town is an hour and 15 minutes from New York City. New York City has always been a major target for terrorist actions. We have the rails that go down to Hudson that bring toxic chemicals through that on a regular basis. Thank God nothing's derailed on that rail. We have bridges that we're responsible for. We have the New York State Thruway, and St. Francis Hospital is the only trauma center in the Hudson Valley. So the protection of our citizens, the protection of our emergency response team, which by the way is made up of individuals, not just from the sheriff's office, but from every entity, every town, municipality in this county, including that of the chief here of New Paltz. So thank you.
Any other discussion?
So I'll just say, I'm horrified by the types of weapons that are in the civilian population. These weapons are clearly being found in rural communities. We have people in New York that are shooting those that come down their driveway. And to have our deputies in that position, knowing that they're going into harm's way without the right equipment, does horrify me. I see that as a major reason why this equipment is necessary. It also horrifies me, frankly, to rely on the state troopers for this kind of specialized stuff. I'm very concerned, in light of recent events, with the training that the troopers receive and the ways that it could put our deputies in harm's way. Relying on the troopers for those kinds of situations when our deputies are the ones that are familiar with the community, that know how to work together. I don't mean to disparage anyone, including the troopers, but I'm much more comfortable with our team being the ones that have this capability. My only request, and we have discussed this, and I know we're on the same page, is that it's not painted in a way that I don't believe will be a de-escalation. I think if it's painted, like black or army green or something like that, I don't think that's a good thing. I think it should be painted like, the white cars that you guys have or whatever it is. I really think that it is not, I understand that you want a barricaded suspect or active shooter, whatever it is, to understand that they're dealing with a piece of equipment that's going to end the situation, they should just surrender. I think that the very intimidating paint scheme can actually escalate things with folks based on the images that people have seen on TV with some of the really rough interactions between the community and law enforcement. So that's my only request, and I hope that that's honored. But besides that, I'm very supportive of this.
Thank you.
So if I may, yes. Madam Chair, we will color the vehicle white with the sheriff's colors. There would not be any tactical paint on that, whether it's a green olive or black. And the policy states that the commander and the sheriff make the determination when that piece of equipment is utilized and how. I did have a conversation with the chair of the legislature, who requested a yearly or quarterly report on the use if we get it, and I said that I would do that.
Very good.
I did a little reading and research myself, and I'm just going to read. It's very short about Bearcats, and I thought it was good, and it was. Bearcats are typically referred to by law enforcement agencies as being armored rescue vehicles, with their primary use being to transport tactile officers to and from hostile situations and to assist with the recovery and protection of civilian in harm's way during threatening situations. And I just think that said it really well, the purpose. So any other discussion? Yes.
I agree that the MRAP is very intimidating and unnecessary. So I think this shift will be helpful.
Thank you. Okay, so I'm ready to call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion is carried 4-0. Resolution 295, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature and the Ulster County Sheriff to execute an application for Department of Justice FY 2023, implementing crisis intervention teams, community policing solicitation grant, Ulster County Sheriffs. Motion to discuss?
I'll move it. Second.
Huchetel and Fabiano. Discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. This shows you how many different things we do in law enforcement. You would have told me 10 years ago, number one, that I'd be the sheriff, but number two, that I'd be working with social workers and peer advocates. You see on her, but I'd be laughing at you. But the truth is, it is and I'm going to steal Lieutenant Story's line, it's the future of law enforcement. I think some of the things that we've saw recently lead me to believe that this grant is definitely needed. We know it works because implementing a program with social workers and peer advocates for the opioid epidemic is extremely helpful, important, and changed the behavior and culture of law enforcement itself. I believe in the Oracle program, and I believe this program, which will focus on mental health issues, is extremely beneficial to our community. Just last year, we had over 500 police mental health contacts. Just last month, we had 22 non-fatal overdoses, and of the 22, 7 were intentional. That's a mental health issue. Those are mental health issues. And I think having a team and the training to train law enforcement and embedded with us, instead of having different groups and different bosses going to a specific location that's very dangerous, you're going to have a team that understands and know each other that can deal with a mental health issue a little bit more streamlined than we've ever done it before. And that's why we're applying for this grant.
Is this a new grant?
This is a new grant.
Okay. Discussion? So I'm ready to call the question.
I just want to add something.
Yes, absolutely.
I think it is the future of policing to involve the community, and I think what we saw in Ellenville is how the mobile mental health unit can arrive and we can work better together in the future. And this is one example of how we can have community policing address things that police don't necessarily have to, because you're busy with much more urgent matters. Let's say there could be mediation and discussion. I think that is the future.
The number I just said earlier, the 7 intentional overdoses, the reason why we know it's intentional is because the Oracle team went out there. Social workers and members of the sheriff's office. That's how we got that information, because they were in the community and they spoke to these individuals. And I believe that since we've been doing this now for 2.5 years, that this is something that we all need to focus on and work better together.
Call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion is carried 4-0. Resolution number 296, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the Roundout Valley Central School District to provide a deputy sheriff as school resource officer, Ulster County Sheriff. Motion to discuss.
I'll second it.
Fabiano, discussion. Sheriff Figueroa.
You got me again.
Well, I do.
So 295 and 296 are very similar, Madam Chair.
Yes.
96 and 97. So I brought some folks with us to discuss, and I know this is another hot issue, and it's that of the school resource officer. This program is paid for by the school districts. They interview the individuals that become their school resource officers, and the school resource officers are trained to do the jobs that they do. And I'm going to turn it over to Lieutenant Chad Story, who oversees this program, about the different buildings at the SROs and the campuses that they're responsible for. And then after that, the lieutenant's going to hand it over to our very own SRO from Onteora, Deputy Tommy Sharon, who's right over there. So, Lieutenant, you're up.
Thank you, Sheriff. Thank you, everyone, for having us. So I just want to start by saying one of the other hats that I wear within this agency of the Sheriff's Office is I chair our School Safety Committee meeting, which is a monthly meeting where we meet with all the school superintendents or school officials, principals. And I can say, since I took over that role, the SRO program has expanded quite a lot. Now, every school district, every public school district in Ulster County, except for New Paltz, currently has at least one school resource officer or something. Marlborough School District has a school resource officer in every building. And as a matter of fact, they just expanded to have a roving school resource officer to check the parking lots throughout the day of the various buildings, because they're not a single campus school. The Highland School District just as well added a school resource officer this year. And Ellenville has added school resource officers, and they had security as well. You talk about community policing and being part of the community. What a better way to meet our youth than interaction at the younger level of elementary school, to have that positive interaction with a police officer or deputy sheriff or trooper, whichever law enforcement official. And to build that trust over years and years and years of just interacting or playing dodgeball, or as Deputy Sharon calls it, taking the temperature of the students when they come in the morning, actually standing at the door and, you know, seeing those smiling faces coming in, and then reading the body language and identifying, oh, maybe somebody's having a bad day, I'm going to check in with them today. And it works. It really does work. So I'm just going to touch on the training that the specialized training that school resource officers get. It's a 40-hour block of instruction, and it runs the gamut from some de-escalation training to legal issues, which, you know, includes the FERPA and other regulations that the state ed puts on us, as well as the districts. But it also goes into the role of what a school resource officer is, and I think that's important to understand. The role of the school resource officer is just that, to build that trust in the community. Our school resource officers, the deputy sheriff school resource officers, they don't make arrests in the school. And if there is an arrest, which is an absolute last resort, it's a decision that's made in conjunction with the administration. Because quite honestly, there's more that can be done on the school administration level than what we can do on the law enforcement level. And it just makes sense. I've been a certified school resource officer since about 2015 myself. I've held many school resource officer trainings here in the county. The third week of August, we're actually hosting school resource officer training. The Sheriff's Association out of Albany and Department of Criminal Justice is coming down to put that school on for us. And I welcome anybody to come sit through it and attend. If there's any other questions, let me an interim. If not, I'm going to turn it over to our one of the best SROs in the county, and not just because he works for us.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tom Sharon. I just passed my 12th year with the sheriff's office as a police officer. I'm a father of four, so I got to say like the 12 years and father of four because everyone says I have a baby face and I look really young. I'm actually 34. The sheriff always jokes, like, are you one of the kids? Like, you should even have a uniform on. So I'm not just a deputy sheriff or an armed guard, people like to say in the schools. I'm a mentor. I'm a parent to them. I'm a social worker. Part of my job every day is I work with the team. I work with the principals, the teachers, the staff, the social workers, the psychologists. I'm on all those teams. And there's, if you go to any Audi or student, there's not a kid that doesn't know who I am. And they call me Deputy Tom. And I know a lot of the kids from when they're in fifth grade, and now they're seniors. I've been there for almost 6-7 years, and they're still calling me Deputy Tom because it just, you know, resonates through the community. I live in the community that I am the school resource officer, so I coach the Little League teams, the flag football teams. I'm out in the public. They see me at the restaurants. They see me everywhere. They all have my cell phone number. I get calls all hours of the night. Everyone knows who I am. And the kids aren't scared of me whatsoever. They come up to me all the time. Hey, I got a speeding ticket. Can you help me out? Just this morning, I was playing dodgeball with third graders, and an hour later, I'm teaching seniors about drinking and driving and the dangers of it. So I have many hats. I do home visits, and a lot of times you see a police officer at your house and you're like, what the heck, right? They invite me in. Their parents are like, come on in, Tom, sit down, let's talk, what's going on? The sheriff talked about the Oracle program before. Because the school has me there, we put three kids through the program because they're in crisis and they had addiction. The school wouldn't have had that, and now they're successfully recovered through our program. So there's many hats that I wear, not just as a police officer, but to be a resource for the school in that community.
How many campuses are on your school district?
So we have the Onior High School, Middle School, the Bennett Elementary School, the Woodstock Elementary School, and the Phoenicia Elementary School. I visit all five every day. Now the high school and middle school are in the same building, but I go to every campus every day and work with all the staff. And I have prom on Saturday, which the kids voted to have me there. Otherwise, my wife had other plans for us, but I said, they voted me, I have to go there.
So. Can you get dressed up or what?
I do go in suit and tie, actually. I do.
That's great.
I got asked to drive a limo.
Legislator.
I was going to ask, you answered toward the end there, but what resources you share that the county has available? I know we have a lot of departments that offer different resources, and how are you communicating that?
So we have a threat assessment team, which we identify, you know, it's a newer thing. We identify kids that we think, not just the typical active shooter, but they have violence in their life and trauma, and they may be violent one day. So we utilize the new threat assessment team, which we've been rolling out, and it's been, you know, one of the resources we use is the county and probation and mental health services. So with mental health, I don't want to get too in details with students, but we use the Nexus program, which is a family-based trauma program that works into the house to help these families out. We use Oracle. We utilize probation. A lot of times I'll call probation up and say, hey, I have this case. I don't necessarily want to charge the kid. I just want to make it kind of an educational piece. What do you have? Like, what can I provide them?
So, you know, I think this is a very dynamic topic. I feel like in this case, as with many cases, we're asking law enforcement to do a lot that goes, you know, beyond what I think we should rely on law enforcement for. I mean, you know, serving as social workers, as mental health specialists, I'm grateful for that work. I don't think it should fall on law enforcement. It makes me concerned about our schools and the way that we fund our schools. So it makes me concerned about all of the other issues in our society. I'm very encouraged about the success that we're having with Oracle. It seems that law enforcement is a very effective way in actually diverting people out of the criminal justice track through Oracle, and I hope that school resource officers are part of that same story, where issues that might have resulted in a criminal justice outcome for a student result in a more compassionate outcome. I'm also in the process of digesting for my community, Kingston, which is not one of the communities that participates in the county's SRO program, but I'm in the middle of digesting the news of a very violent attack that happened in our high school yesterday, and I'm trying to wrap my mind around it right now. School resource officers were present in the building, but were not able to prevent that horrible assault from happening. Police officers were, you know, in Uvalde, Texas. Police officers were in, the elementary school in Florida. It really sounds like, you know, there are certain violent things that you would think of police officers dealing with that you just can't always be there. And the things that school resource officers do deal with are really the social, you know, opportunities to help. And that gives me pause. I'm very, very excited to hear some of the ways that you've described your work with the students, and it just concerns me that those stories that are very encouraging are the responsibility of law enforcement. So as I have in the past, I'm going to support this tonight to move it forward out of committee. I also have a really hard time saying no to a district that, you know, saying no to a school that isn't from, that I don't represent, you know. Kingston is not, you know, one of the entities we're talking about tonight. So that also weighs on me as well. And I do want to thank you for your work.
Thank you.
I also want to commend you for how serious you take your job and the job you do with those children. You should be highly commended. And keep up the good work, because in a lot of situations, you're probably the only thing they have to go to sometimes, a lot of those children, for your guidance and guiding them in the right direction. So keep up the good work, and that's awesome what you do.
Thank you.
Very awesome.
Sheriff Figueroa.
Thank you, Sheriff. Thank you all for listening. I appreciate your input. I know this is a hard decision for certain folks that don't understand or agree with the SRO program. You know, law enforcement has always had a multitude of hats because we're the first one there. You're not going to get a social worker at 2 o'clock in the morning when something happens. We're it, right. And we always have been it. You know, but I also see the dramatic change in the profession in what you're talking about. I believe that someday we will be there. But it's something that starts, and it always has been, in this profession. You've heard, I'm sure, the stories that I was a brand new trooper. This lady kept calling the barracks. She was an elderly lady, lived by herself, and said that there was somebody in her attic. She kept calling. I finally said, I'm just going to go over there. And I went over there, and I said, let me go see who's there. I knew there was something wrong, but she's not a danger to herself or others. There's not much that we can do. So I went into the attic, and I'm sure you heard the story before.
No.
And I took my nightstick, and I went through the cobwebs. There's been nothing up there for years. And I beat up whatever it was that was up there, and I came down, and I told her, and I said, I got him, he's out, he's never coming back again. And she didn't call for 6 months.
Wow.
Who else would do that?
Yeah.
We've called just recently an individual that was sending some really harassing and horrific emails to elected officials, and we called the mental health team to come out. The person was living at a mobile home, I mean, not a mobile home, a motel. And when they knocked on the door, the person looked out the window and closed the door. And that team says, nothing we could do, we're closing the case. That's not the same thing that we in law enforcement can do. We can't just close the case like that. And that's what the difference is between a law enforcement officer's response and that of anybody else. And that's why we have the responsibilities that we have, because we have to do something. We just can't walk away from an issue. We have to do something about it. So thank you.
I wanted to thank Superintendent Joe Morgan for calling me today, and we had a good conversation about SROs. I told him that the legislature has talked about the weapon that the SROs carry, And as a practitioner of Gandhian nonviolence, I'm against weapons on officers in general, and peace officers are something we work with in the town of Rochester. But as we talked about, the role model and the way that you're there for the students and how it can create a goal for some students to become an SRO or a sheriff, I think it's an important part of our schools.
As somebody that just retired from, I spent 20 years in education, so I firsthand saw the benefits of having SROs. So I was in Marlboro School District, where we're lucky enough to have a number of wonderful individuals, and the rapport between the officers and the students is just incredible. And to your point, and I don't want to speak on your behalf, but also I think that when the officers do have a conversation with a student, they can then refer them to the social workers, which I think is a great thing, and that they all work together. So so I think that's a positive as well. So that's all I just wanted to add.
Can I just say one more thing?
Yes.
So we literally just hired a new deputy that she had a positive interaction with a school resource officer at elementary school, which is what wanted her, which made her be a police officer today. Mm-hmm. And she just started with us within a year. And she's got a great story.
That's awesome. Any other discussion?
Am I allowed to speak as just an audience member?
I don't know. You can
speak
to your discretion
of the chair.
Yes.
You can speak.
So I'm from the New Falls School District. And it's great. It sounds like there's been some really positive interactions. What about the negative interactions with kids, specifically kids of color? Is there any specific training about cultural sensitivity, how to not make snap judgment if a person doesn't look exactly like you or behave culturally different from what you expect? Is there anything?
Yeah, I mean, I interact with every student, doesn't matter about your color, your race, whatsoever. I mean, I have kids, we have a cadet program, which is kids 14 to 20 years of age. That's to get them into law enforcement. And we had a number of color kids that have come through the program because of me and a lot of the other SROs. They don't look at me as the uniform, they look at me as Tom and come up to me. And like I said, there's not a kid, doesn't matter, black, white, whatever, they're not scared of me. And we do have, the sheriff puts on training.
We also do a sheriff's camp twice a year in the summer, and we ask our SROs to get, and this is mainly toward the underprivileged, that folks that can't afford to go. This is run by the New York State Sheriff's. It's up in Pennyang, and we send them up there for 2 weeks. 1 week each, we get 2 weeks out of it, but we send kids up there. And that's the majority of the folks that are there are counselors, but they're deputies. They don't know that until the last day. And they do everything from sailing to fishing, archery, and I heard an interesting story just relating to what you're saying. You're right, there are different instances where people don't feel comfortable with law enforcement. I'm aware of it. It was someone last year who said to me, Sheriff, I understand what you're saying, and I understand it's not every school district, but there are issues with certain school districts and the SRO program. For example, one of the other school districts in another county, the individuals work in the summer, end up arresting their parents, and when they go back to school, they see the police officer, and they feel uncomfortable about that. And that's a legitimate question that these parents do. That they're right, and then we don't have that issue. That's not how we do our training and how we train our folks to do it. I can't speak for other law enforcement entities that have SROs. I can speak for the sheriff's office and. Chad, talk a little bit about the training relating to what she said, and I think it's important.
Absolutely. So there's I talked about the school resource officer training, the 40-hour block, but the Department of Criminal Justice Services, which governs most of our training, they have rolled out over the last couple of years a new implicit bias training, principal policing, evidence-based policing, which all those courses are talking about. Yes, certainly a concern. I just want to say because our guys do such a great job, and not just because I'm their supervisor, but because I get to interact with
every school district in the county at least once a month, if not a phone call saying, hey, our SRO, our local SRO from the local agency called out sick, can you provide us with a deputy for the day? So that's a good feeling when we're getting that from other school districts. It's not our primary responsibility, but they're asking us to come out.
I completely understand the need for it. It's just, if there's blind spots, is there a plan for addressing those blind spots? Especially when parents
come forward.
Okay.
Sure. I mean, once again, I think that's a conversation that would be had with school district officials, as well as, you know, the sheriff and I as the, obviously, he's the boss, but the SROs.
So obviously, there's certain expectations that I expect our SROs to do. Discipline's not one of them. You know, we don't do
that. I think that was the big concern.
Yes, we don't do that.
Oh, I don't discipline. I've never
discipline. No.
In the school.
Our school resource officers are, they are not disciplinarians in the school. They're mentors. That's on the school district. And like I said, you know, and when I first started talking about our program, should it rise to that level, which I can't really remember the last time it rose to that level, we usually pull our SROs out of it and we'll bring another deputy. But it's with constant consultation with the administration.
I know, and I didn't realize that.
Well, you know, the district attorney's office.
I get it.
As well as the counselors. I think another key component to all this is Deputy Tom there alluded to the fact that every school has their own threat assessment team, which in the example he was talking about, the school threat assessment team has done everything that they have. They've utilized all their school resources that they have. So now we've just bumped it up to the county level, and we've just met for the first time on a case the other day, and that included the Department of Mental Health, as well as emergency management, and myself, and Trooper Anika Watt, who's the community and school outreach for the state police here in this area. And it was good to see sitting at that table with all these individuals and having a question on how are we going to help this family in this particular case. You know, one of the major hurdles to start to be able to get the family help was immigration status. So Trooper Watt, through some of her connections, and the sheriff and some of his connections, were able to, ultimately, we're going to link this individual up with a representative to assist them in getting their citizenship. And that was a big concern for the family. And I think once we put that at ease, then we can start getting to the real issue of what's going on and why are some of the services really not working at this point.
Okay, can we move this along?
I know you got to move along.
We have to move this meeting along. We have other things here.
I'm going to call on Legislator Usatilla's hand up.
Yeah, so I just want to say one thing with a lot of the can we just have one person talk?
Yes, please.
With a lot of the learning that many of us have been doing in the last few years, I think it's very, very important to understand the impact that language can have and the language that we use can have. And one thing that I made a commitment to a number of years ago is that when I hear language being used that is harmful to folks, I speak up about it, particularly when the person using the language is someone that looks like me. And that, because I feel rather than calling out, I like to think of it as calling in for a conversation. So I do want to mention that in the response provided, a term was used that should have been, and I think meant to be, students of color. The term that was used is not one that we use today. Colored kids is not something that we say today, and I don't mean to be admonishing, but folks that I heard use that language when I was growing up were folks that wore their bias on their sleeve. I know that that's not what's happening here, but when folks hear that language, they will associate it with folks that have those biases. So I made a commitment to call people in for a conversation when I hear that language being used, when I hear other types of language being used, and so I wanted to do that now to point out that we did hear that, and it could be harmful for students to hear that associate that with folks that will treat them in a biased manner.
Okay. Legislator Hewitt.
Thank you. Also, I think that training and sensitivity isn't necessarily about Deputy Tom, even though you might be the kindest person. It's about across-the-board training. Through the chair, I was wondering if Sheriff Figueroa can describe the software we bought last year that provides sensitivity training. We purchased something that is virtual reality or something immersive. Is that true?
Are we talking about the
sensitivity training?
Yes, the de-escalation.
So, de-escalation. Yeah. And so I think that since we've been required to upgrade our law enforcement departments, the county has incorporated trainings on sensitivity and de-escalation that is very important.
And we are continuing to work on that. That's something that we're going to continue to work on.
Okay. I'm going to call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? So the motion, resolution 296, is passed 4-0. Resolution number 297, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the Onteora Central School District to provide a deputy sheriff as school resource officer. Ulster County Sheriff, motion to discuss.
I'll move it.
Second.
Uchitel and Fabiano, discussion. Basically, it's if there is no discussion, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion is carried 4-0. Resolution number 298, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an MOU between the Onteora Central School District and the Sheriff's Office for access to Onteora's closed circuit TV. Ulster County Sheriff.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is strictly at the request of the Onteora School District. If there's an incident, they're going to allow us to look at the closed circuit TV.
Thank you. I spoke out of line, so I just need the motion to discuss.
Move it to discuss.
You should tell. And a second.
Second.
Hewitt. And the sheriff already talked about it, so I think we're okay with that. Any other discussion? I'm going to call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Anyone opposed? Resolution is carried 4-0. Resolution number 299, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget, authorizing payment of retroactive COVID pay, Ulster County. I'm going to say that no action is going to be taken at this time due to pending litigation. We're going to table this per legal counsel. Okay? If we want to discuss this, we need to go into executive session at the end of the meeting.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Resolution number 300, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services for participation in the Crimes Against Revenue Program. District Attorney, motion to discuss.
I'll move it.
You should tell.
Second.
Legislator Fabiano. District Attorney Clegg, would you like to speak on this?
Sure, briefly. This is an ongoing program, Crimes Against Revenue. It involves financial crimes, fraud against government, et cetera, that's been going on for a long time. It provides support for one of our ADAs who is our financial crimes person, and it also provides support for investigators that are involved in those crimes. We also have a portion of it which can be used for a forensic accountant when necessary.
Any discussion? Okay. Thank you. We're going to call the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Motion is carried 4-0. Resolution number 301, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an agreement with the New York State Division of Criminal Justice Services for participation in the Criminal Justice Discovery Reform Grant. District Attorney, Department of Probation, and the Sheriff's Department. Motion to discuss?
Motion.
Hewitt, and second. Legislator Uchitel, and discussion? any of you?
So I'll start. Fortunately, the state legislature has decided to try and reimburse us for the costs of discovery. And that's what this is about. My office, with the blessing of the legislature, has started a discovery unit where we use five different individuals, investigators, specialists in records keeping and videography in terms of trying to reproduce the discovery that this world is now requiring. So, just a quick one. The world of discovery has exploded. We have body cams, we have car cams, we have telephones, we have all kinds of cybergenetic issues that are happening in our world that require terabytes of information that my office now has to provide within a very short period of time to the Defense Council. So this money has been used to set up that discovery unit within my office. We also have, obviously, the sheriff, and he can speak to that. It makes demands on all of law enforcement to, with the time limitations that we have. We have, obviously, communications with every law enforcement group in this community to try and provide that information in a timely fashion so that we can prosecute the cases that are required. I think this number is $789,000. It comes from the state. It reimburses the legislature for the cost for my office, and also contributes to the cost for probation and for the sheriff's department.
Anybody else want to speak on that?
Probation was put in because the discovery and pretrial bail reform was all in one. The way we've distributed, though, is the money's going primarily to the DAs and the sheriff's office with our support.
Very good. Any discussion? So we're going to ask the question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Resolution is carried 4-0. Resolution number 305, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $37,509.50, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entered into the county, C&S Engineers, Inc., Department of Public Works. Motion to discuss?
Move it.
You should tell.
Second.
Fabiano. Any discussion? Or Director Erickson, did you want to speak on this, please?
It needs to be pulled. This was submitted incorrectly.
Okay.
So we're going to pull this.
All right. So what do I do?
Okay. We can take no action.
Take no action.
So, if I may.
Yes.
Technically, and this has been a cause of discussion in the past, so the right now this is sponsored by the chair and the deputy chair, I would assume. So technically only legislators can pull legislation.
Okay.
So, you know, if they acquiesce, then they'll pull it. We can take no action tonight.
Okay.
But in the past, not necessarily Everett, but others in the executive branch have made the decision to pull things. You really can't do that without asking the sponsor.
It was submitted in ink. The numbers are wrong.
Okay.
So we're going to have that conversation.
So I would, yeah,
okay.
But you could potentially pull it by communicating with Vicki, but my advice would be to take no action tonight.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And we vote on that, correct?
To
or
take
we just
no
take
action?
No action? Or
well,
just take no
so
action?
There, did we motion for it to be discussed already?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think we can just move on.
Okay.
This is kind of what I was trying to say before with if there was like another motion that would kill the prior motion. So if this is the last resolution,
okay.
So we don't, it doesn't matter. But
okay.
That would be, we can just
my apologies.
Okay, so we're going to take no action on resolution number 305.
No action.
And that is the last resolution. So forthcoming, just for your information for the committee, the forthcoming resolution, resolution number 309, placing a spending cap of X amount of dollars on all costs related to the proposed Government Operations Center at Paradise Lane in New Paltz. So that will be forthcoming. Anyone have any new business? Sheriff, would you like to speak on your open house this weekend?
Sure. We had a, first of all, we're down 28 corrections officers in the Oswego County Sheriff's Office. We don't have, we're not the only ones with this issue. Everyone in the state has the same issue. Albany is down 75. So we decided to do an open house. We're in a pilot program. And we try to diversify the office as well. And we were pretty successful. We had about 20 people that came on Saturday and signed up for the test, which is May 12th. If you know anyone that can take the test, please tell them to take it. It is a good paying job. It starts out at $51,000. Top pay is $74,000. It's one of the toughest jobs in law enforcement. But things, we're adding programs and we're trying to change the way things are done at that facility. And we need new people to do that. So, thank you, Madam Chair, for me speaking about that.
Okay. Anyone else? Any new business?
Madam Chair, I just have
yes.
Two things quick. First thing is the county executive just announced today text to 911. That press release came out this afternoon. We went live with that.
Oh.
We did a soft go live about 2 weeks ago, just trying to test it out, make sure all the bugs were taken out before we announced it and we start really using it. Within that 2 week period, within the first couple of days, actually, we took three text messages. Two actually resulted in arrests because one female had called their mother and said that she was people were bothering her at a basketball game. She needed help. People were cornering her. She actually wasn't at the basketball game because the 911 center was able to text her and see where she was. We found out where she was, and it resulted in arrest. She was locked up. She locked herself in a bathroom. And then there's a couple other ones that resulted in good outcomes. We've had a lot of people ask about text to 911, and we were able to get that live. And then the last thing is, Lieutenant Story did mention the countywide threat assessment team, Ultra Threat Assessment Coalition, which you and Legislator Ushida were both involved with Executive Order 18. That's moving forward now. We did have our first meeting with the core group, and the way that works is other threat assessment teams throughout the county, that whether it be a school district or a commercial company, can bring things to the countywide threat assessment team. We have discussions initially, and then we bring in other resources to really review the case. And we did have our first meeting, and that went very well in my mind. I think
that's
what would be great. It was very, very, very productive. So I think it's going to do very well in the county.
Very good. And congratulations on that 911 text program as well.
That was good.
Anyone have any old business? Okay. May I have a motion?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second.
Yeah. Legislator Hewitt, Legislator Ushitel.
Laura wanted to do it.
Yeah,
she said.
Okay.
Well,
yeah.
So
we are adjourned.
Okay.
Or not?
So let's vote on it. Before we vote on it, discussion on the adjournment.
Yes.
There's a resolution that we did not take an action on that relates to pending litigation.
Correct.
We could go into executive session, we could make everyone here leave, and it would just be the legislators,
mm-hmm.
and there would be no one to explain it. There is no attorney here.
Right.
I would rather, I want to find out more about this, and I'm speaking to the legislator Petit as well. I want to
mm-hmm.
find out more about this, but
I didn't have any attorney speak with me, so.
Yeah, so I want to talk to counsel, because I'm just learning about this now, and frankly, even if we went into executive session, I'm not even comfortable.
It would be useless to go.
It would be, yeah. So my view would be to adjourn the meeting, and I'm
okay.
gonna, we can all call.
Because there's nobody
counsel.
Here that knows what's going on.
Yeah, we got to find out the story. I don't see why what we
I
would get out
you.
Of it. Yeah.
But the chair has the story though. Somebody.
Well, and I talk to people about it as well, but I'm learning more about it today, which I don't know that we have a lot of information about that. So I'm not. We could go into executive session. I just personally, that wouldn't be my choice for how to find out about this. And either way, everyone's going to walk out of this room in a few minutes anyway. So.
Yeah.
Voting on.
So I would go forward with the vote on adjourning.
Okay.
Personally, would be my feeling.
Mm-hmm. And
I agree.
Okay. So do I say the question also, or just we are adjourned?
No, we've got to vote on it. So
vote on adjournment.
Yeah.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Thank you. Thank you for your patience with me. I have a learning curve.
You did good.
No, you're good.
You did all right.
Wonderful. Congratulations.